Hey, this is your host, Daphne Laforêt, and before we start with this week's episode, I really want to introduce you to our main partner for the podcast, Catalog. And I couldn't be more grateful and proud because what they have built is seriously a game changer. Catalog is a work hub that replaces a whole stack of tools with a single platform that centralizes your people, processes, and knowledge, and it's completely customizable. But what is next level is that it uses AI to mold instantly to the structure of your business, which means you can get started straight away. Using just a brief description, it builds a bespoke platform precisely configured to run your company operations all in a matter of seconds. It is structured and seamlessly connected, meaning work becomes visible, processes are automated, and collaboration is supercharged. So go ahead and get started at catalog.com. That's catalog with a Q, and let me know what you think.
Welcome to the Remote First podcast, produced by Modern Leaders. Every other Tuesday, listen in to hear from large or innovative companies enabling an equitable and distributed workplace experience.
We've seen multiple big organizations completely adapting their ways of working, culture, and processes to the benefits of flexible work. Still, there's a lot to learn, so I'm inviting over Alastair Simpson, VP of Design at Dropbox. Dropbox did a true 180, going through a complete shift since 2020. And in a unique way, instead of going through that change with the angle of operations or HR, Alastair is leading it with design. Thank you for joining, Alastair.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here on the show. I feel very honored and privileged, so thank you.
I feel very honored and privileged that you're the one.
Thank you. And it's nice to join all the way from California. Thank you for taking the time in the evening.
Yeah. I'm back in Berlin and California. It's always hard to find the right timing for recording these sessions. So I appreciate your morning call with me today. So you've been leading with your team the virtual first shift of Dropbox, and it's quite unique to have design leading that change. So actually, I think it makes a lot of sense to do it that way. But to start, can you introduce your role in that change and explain why Dropbox is choosing design to lead its workplace transformation?
Yeah, it's a very common question because I'm fortunate to attend lots of different like future of work events, and I'm generally the only design leader there. There's often people from HR or different types of functions, but never really design. And so it's a common question. And for us, as the pandemic started, there was obviously an opportunity to really change how we were going to be working. And this was obviously going to be a unique opportunity in time. We definitely felt, and I was able to convince Dropbox, that we were essentially redesigning how we work. And in terms of redesigning how you work, you can apply design thinking practices to that. And so at the heart of design thinking is putting your customer at the heart of everything that you do. And in this case, it was our employees. And also assumptions, framing problems in different ways so that we could actually get to more iterative solutions that really focused on our employees as the kind of key customer that we were optimizing for. And so that's really how it all started. As we were going through the pandemic and I was integrating into Dropbox, and then with this wonderful opportunity to lead through design. You know, whilst design has been leading this effort, it is a true partnership. Design, when you're building products, is a true partnership with engineering, product, data science, lots of different functions. And it's been exactly the same at Dropbox, where I've been partnering with the people team, our people analytics team, many different functions across the business to make sure that we're being inclusive in how we're thinking about changing work for the better for our employees.
I really like also in the past episode, we had Ross Chapman. We talked about hybrid being a design challenge. And lately, there's a lot of questions about how to do a hybrid, or people are trying to have remote employees. They want to have it all. And realizing that there's a lot, as you say, to redesign everything. So you have some thoughts around this as well.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly believe that you can treat everything as a design problem. There's a wonderful book by Bill Burnett called Designing Your Life. And it basically takes the same principles of design thinking, challenging assumptions, reframing problems as opportunities. And it applies design thinking to how you design your life. And I certainly do that personally. And then again, as the challenge of remote work or hybrid work, as many companies are looking at it, you can still apply design and the frameworks that we have when we're building products usually to that same problem, because ultimately to build great experiences or great products, if you put the customer at the heart of everything that you're doing, then that is going to lead to really effective outcomes. And then if you actually can iterate your way there, because that's been one of the key principles for us at Dropbox, has been adopting a learning mindset, because we know that we're not going to get it right first time, and that we'll have to iterate and learn from feedback from our employees, which is what we've been doing. Is we've been piloting different practices with our employees. We've been piloting things, learning, hearing from employees, and including them in that kind of co-creation journey as we're changing how we work for the better. And so I definitely agree with Ross. I'm actually catching up with him, I think, in the next few weeks, that you can apply design practices to any problem that you're trying to solve.
So in all the things that you've done at Dropbox, basically you said that you were having a learning process for everything, having a learning approach. What is the thing that you mostly was the biggest learning during that process of going virtual first?
I don't know if it's obvious or not, but I think, and I'll lead with the, it's behavior change, really, right? If you actually, and then that may sound simple, but it's often really, really hard. And so, especially when you're trying to do that at scale. And so if you think about how we work, and certainly how I think about how we work, it's effectively hasn't really changed for over 100 years. The models that we've been working in came from factory work, where you started at 8, finished roughly at 5. There was a bell to start the day and a bell to end the day. That got adopted into schools as well, and there were set times for breaks, and it was always synchronized in time in the same place. Modern office work really is exactly the same. Like, we just go to a building and we have meetings, like we come together synchronized in time. And even though we've got new technology, you know, phones can now dial in via Zoom or many other different video conferencing software, we've really not changed how we operate. Like, people still go to an office to dial into a meeting remotely, or actually the technology has pervaded into people's lives. So instead of starting at 8 and finishing at 5, you'll be constantly on, like after those hours, because your mobile will be pinging with different notifications. And actually, instead of the technology enabling us to live better, more effective lives and getting a better life-work balance, I like to use life first versus work-life balance, it's actually meant that a lot of technology has bled into our lives and we're just feeling always on, right? So instead, we're just synchronized in time. We go to an office and then we have these long commutes, then we get home and we're still online because we're getting pinged with all these notifications. And so, but that's just our learned behavior for over 100 years, really. It's just, and it's just technology has just added onto that. What happened, remote work, as you would know, Daphne, has been around for a long time. But many companies, when, and I know this from experience, they would, when they looked at remote practices, they'd be like, oh, that won't work for us. We're too big. That simply won't work. This is how we work. Like, we have to be in the office for these moments of creativity. We have to come together for those serendipitous interactions, right? And actually, what the pandemic, as much as it was incredibly devastating for so many people, it forced us all to challenge those assumptions. It forced everybody to say, well, will remote work for us or not? And what happened was many companies just kept working. And they realized that it was no longer okay to just say, oh, well, that's no good for us, because you suddenly had companies of thousands of people who had transitioned to remote successfully, or even if they weren't successful, they hadn't necessarily collapsed, as many people who doomsayers would have said, it just won't work for us. And so in that change during the pandemic, we were all forced to challenge those assumptions around why remote won't work for us. And actually, what it's been proven is that people have gotten a taste, he's got a taste of what it's like not to have to commute. And they got the ability to spend more time with their children and their families or personal interests, and found that they're still able to manage their career. And so there's no going back from that, I don't think. There's this want that. But the biggest challenge, coming back to your question, has been, how do you help people with those behaviors that they need to adopt in this kind of new way of working, and just getting us to unlearn all of those old habits about how we thought work happened. We all thought that work always happened synchronized in time in a meeting room or on a Zoom call, right? Like, how do we get people to change those behaviors and those assumptions? Because even people that want to change, they may not know how.
So when you are talking about behavioral shift, for example, is there a way that you've been doing at Dropbox? Is there some sort of framework or something you use to help the company going through that change, support them in that change? There's a lot of things that are impacting their ways of working.
Yeah, definitely. I think, actually, let me, just before I go on to the real behavioral change, like kind of framework that we've been adopting, mm-hmm. I think one of the things when we were designing our kind of future of work strategy was we wanted to ground it in principles. And this is, again, something designers love to have, is like principles to ground your decision making. And three of those principles, we wanted to maintain human connection and culture, right? Because we understand that we recognize the importance of preserving that human connection, as we still believe that in-person engagement is critical to fostering our culture. But we also wanted to ensure that we kept a level playing field for all of our employees, where everybody had this equal opportunity to succeed, no matter where they were located. The second principle was giving our employees flexibility and freedom, because we wanted employees to have more control over how they work, for example, their schedules, their working environments, and we wanted to give them more options in terms of where they worked, okay? And so by increasing those choices, we'd have this expanded and more diverse talent pool from which we can recruit. And the third principle I've already mentioned a couple of times, but this learning mindset, and this really underpinned our approach because we've tried to remain nimble and adopt the same philosophy that we use to develop our products, which is build, measure, learn, and adapt. Because let's be honest, we knew that we weren't going to get it right the first time. And so I think grounding it in those principles and then being very intentional and transparent with our employees, like communications, the amount of communications we've had with employees have been vast through various different channels. But then with those principles in mind, we recognize that we are trying to adopt radical change in people's behaviors, right? Like really challenging those assumptions that I just mentioned. If anybody has a problem in the typical workday, they will default to, let's schedule a meeting. Let's put a meeting on the calendar. That will be the default response. How do we make that not okay, right? How do we make that not okay? And so when we were trying to inspire this company-wide behavior change for 3,000 employees, we focused on a core set of behavioral shifts or mindset shifts that we wanted to anchor our strategy to, alongside those principles. And so we recognize that this is like a big cultural shift where we're moving from tangible, so working from your desk in an office, to the intangible, so shared unspoken behaviors and norms. And so those behavior shifts that we focused on to make this transition easier were these five concepts. And we wanted to go from a behavior and to a particular behavior. And so the behavior, first one was going from busyness, where people just feel busy checking off tasks on a task list, to actually making sure that employees felt that they were providing impact to our customers and to the business. The second one was around going from all-day syncs, so synchronous all-day meetings, the badge of honor of being back-to-back all day, right? Which is not good. That's not a good thing, right? But somehow in our society, we built that up as a good thing, to going to asynchronous by default. And that's one of the words, I think, of 2021 around remote work, is like, how do you work more asynchronous by default? The next behavior shift was getting people to go from disconnection, where they feel disconnected from their employees and the company, to belonging. How do you help people feel like they belong at the company and that they're included, even when working remotely? And then the last two is going from overload to focus. How do we help people feel like they're just totally overloaded with work, to actually being able to focus on the right problem to try and solve for the customer and for our business? And then the last one is going from consensus driven to conflict mastery, because we believe certainly in when you're working remotely, you do miss some of the physical cues that you get in person. And so trust can be broken like faster when you're working remotely. And so how do you actually go from this consensus driven approach to conflict mastery, even when working remotely? And so those behavior shifts, along with our principles, underpinned how we were trying to help employees go from those behaviors to those behaviors. And we've got a lot of tangible resources that we've given employees to help with that, which I can talk a little bit more about if you want.
I'd love to. I'm actually already super impressed by this framework and everything you put together.
for having worked remotely for many years and as in fully remote company also in the past, it's really nice to see, I would say, big corporation or big companies having to grow through this and build a whole system for 3,000 employees to, it's, I've never seen this before. This is something that is completely new. And this pandemic, we've learned so much just by seeing that you see so many big companies going through that. I would love, love, love if you could actually go through these different behavior frameworks that you talked about and really share examples of like where you showed how to go over these specific topics. Because we often say, okay, we are looking about how we can do this, how can we make it more, create more trust in the company. But we don't necessarily talk enough about what are the things that we are doing. So I'd love to, if you have any examples, that would be really cool to hear.
I think you know this. And for anybody listening, if you just go to Google and search for the Dropbox Virtual First Toolkit, you will find over 20 kits in this toolkit. And what these are, I mean, these were grounded in design thinking, really, but they're grounded in these behavioral shifts. So for example, one of the behavior shifts is, how do I go from all day syncs, so where I'm in meetings constantly, to async by default, right? And so what we've done, and especially when you're trying to do this at scale, is at scale and remote, I certainly believe that you need to give employees self-serve tools for how to manage these behavior shifts, challenge their own assumptions, and give them frameworks and guardrails for how to change. Because just like any behavior change that you're trying to make, giving people some form of guidance is really helpful, right? Like, I'll use the analogy. I go to a personal trainer. I do that because I'm trying to change my own behaviors and I want to be guided through that, right? That's essentially what that guide is doing. But when you're remote, you can't have the one-on-one personal trainer the whole time, right? Like, it just doesn't work. And so the toolkit is over 20 individual kits where they step through practical ways to change your behaviors. And they've got worksheets. You can do them individually or you can run them as a team. And we shared these with obviously the entire company and now the world externally. But that all day syncs to async by default, one of the key kits in there is how to reduce unnecessary meetings. Okay. And it walks you through a step-by-step guide of how to look at the meetings that you've got scheduled. What is the purpose of them? Why do you have them? Are they recurring? And then helps you challenge your assumption about, should this be a meeting, basically? And what we also do in that kit is we give people permission to say no to meetings. And we give boilerplate examples of how to politely decline a meeting.
So, I love that.
Because, again, people, there is social pressure where you get invited to a meeting and you hit yes by default because that's just what you do, right? You click yes. There's the social pressure to say yes to this meeting. And then you turn up to a meeting and there's no agenda. You're not really sure what the outcome is, who's running it. There's 10 people. I always do the math. If there's 10 people in an hour-long meeting, that is like a quarter of a week, right, worth of people, person time. That's a lot. And so if that meeting is not outcome-focused, inclusive, doesn't have an agenda, and inclusivity is also part of this because how do you run inclusive meetings? Incredibly important. And we have a kit in the toolkit about how to run inclusive meetings because different types of personality types, if you're more introverted, you may want an agenda so you can prepare before the meeting so that you can actually know, get in your head what you might want to say, right, based on the topics that are going to be covered. If you don't have an agenda, how does somebody prepare for that meeting? It's not very inclusive, okay? And so the kits in the toolkit are designed to really help people step by step, give them frameworks and guardrails. They're not process, they're not checkboxes, they're not total instructions. We encourage people to flex with them, but they're just designed to help people get over that hurdle and change their own behaviors. And we have a number of them anchored to all of these, from disconnection to belonging. We have a number of kits to help teams create team charters. Because if you have a charter as a team and you know what your mission is as a team, you feel like you belong. You actually feel like you're part of this team. You've created that. And so we've got a kit in there about how to help people do that. And then also how to just get to know one another. And so these are really, really important to give to employees so that at scale, people can self-serve and have guidance, and then create confidence around how they're going to work in these kind of new ways of working. And the only point I'll add on to this is we partnered with our LNOD team early on to run training at scale for a couple of these tool kits, because we believed that there was a couple of them that were really important for us to get right to help people reduce unnecessary meetings and work asynchronous by default. And so we trained over 1,000 people synchronously. Like, we did live training on these behaviors because we just believe they're just so important for to help people get over the kind of hurdle in this new way of working.
Hey everyone, I'm your host, Daphne Laforêt, founder of Modern Leaders, a consulting collective enabling you to walk the talk and scale your company for the remote first future. Our team comes from over a decade of distributed team leadership experience, where we work with organizations from 25 to 5,000 employees. And I am so excited to have put together this podcast to share with you everything that we've been learning over the years. This is the Remote First Podcast.
It's super interesting that you mentioned training, because at the moment, this is basically what I do also for work, but people are really looking for a way to train their leaders, team leaders, to unlearn the way they used to work and also relearn what are the new ways of working and be able to become a better leader remotely, have the same kind of great skills that you have when you have it in person. How do you are getting your team together, keeping momentum in a remote setup? So it's great to see that there is a program at Dropbox for that, definitely. And so if we come back to virtual first, and you said that you had Dropbox, now it's virtual first. I also have seen that you implemented studios that were more like for collaboration together. Are these studios like offices? Is Dropbox virtual first but hybrid? Like, can you explain a little bit, how does it work right now? What is virtual first and how does it work at Dropbox?
Yeah, I think it's a good point, right? Like, when we were rethinking how we wanted the future of work to look at Dropbox, we did see this as, how do I say it? Like, it was an enormous opportunity to almost take a risk, but to turn this kind of outdated notion of productivity or this kind of butts in seat mentality into purpose and impact and something that would be truly meaningful for our employees. But when we looked, because we had a team, and just got to give credit to the HR and the people team, they were leading a lot of the like research into what was going on. And there's obviously hybrid, there's remote only companies like GitLab, there's obviously co-located companies. And so every different model is suit different companies, right? I don't want to say one is better than the other, but for us, we intentionally looked at what was going on and coming back to those principles that I mentioned earlier to human connection culture, give people flexibility and freedom, and maintain this kind of learning mindset. But when we think about that principle of maintaining human connection and culture, we wanted to ensure, and this is the key point I'll underscore, that we wanted to ensure that we keep a level playing field for our employees, where everyone has equal opportunity to succeed no matter where they're located. And they have the same experience, right? And so one of the problems that you do see with hybrid setups is you'll have some people that are in the office and then some people that are working remotely. So that creates two different experiences immediately for how teams work. And that comes with different problems around inclusivity and just practical. We've all been in meetings where you've got three people in a meeting room and then couple of tiles on the Zoom trying to dial in, and it creates an unlevel playing field and it can be awkward, right? And it doesn't create this kind of inclusivity or purpose that I think we wanted. And so when we came out with our virtual first model, it was deliberately not hybrid and it was deliberately not remote only. Virtual first at Dropbox means remote is our primary way of working. So I'm at home right now. This is where I spend the majority of my time. And when we dial into obviously Zoom meetings, we all have a level playing field, we're all equal on that kind of Zoom grid. We did recognize, again, mentioning that principle of maintaining human connection and culture, that we recognize it's important for people to meet face to face. There is a place for getting together physically. And so we retained our offices, but we've rebranded them and renamed them studios, importantly. And we've been very intentional and purposeful about what those studios are for. And those studios for us are meant for meaningful moments of connection, collaboration, and culture building. And what that means practically is I can't go to a studio and do solo work. We don't have banks of desks set up for solo work. We've intentionally designed that physical space for a specific purpose of collaboration or culture building. And so those studios are meant for entire teams to come together once a quarter to actually work through specific problems, like an end of quarter retro or quarter kickoff, whatever that might be, or like a larger social event. They're intentionally designed for that purpose. And I think that is one of the important things and the important distinctions for us with our virtual first model. Now, you might ask, how are those studios going? In the US, we still haven't reopened them, just due to COVID.
I was about to ask exactly this question. I was like, so what's the usage rate right now? Are you just empty or are people going a little bit? Like, because it's real estate. I'll be curious.
No, honestly, we opened them for about a week and then we had to close them due to the Delta variant. And so we obviously put employees' health as paramount. And so we're sticking to local guidance. And so we still haven't opened any of our studios officially in the US. And so I can't talk to you about the usage just yet because we don't know. But that is certainly, as with anything though, we're adopting this learning mindset. When we've designed the spaces, they're flexible. So they can be moved around. We've tried to make sure that you can use them for different purposes. If you've got six people, you can actually make a room smaller. If you've got 20 people, you can make the room bigger. So we've tried to be flexible with our furniture and with the interior design so that you can actually, well, we can change and reconfigure the rooms and the spaces as we see fit. But I think the main point is that it's intentionally designed for a specific purpose. Whereas if you look at a lot of physical space, it's all things for everybody, right? And so because it's all things for everybody, it doesn't have a specific purpose and it can often not do all of those things really well. Versus what we're saying is, no, this is for teams, groups to come together to collaborate or culture building. And that's how we're going to intentionally design the space.
Well, I think we should definitely catch up next year because I really want to know after maybe a year of trying the studio to see, okay, what worked, what didn't work, what kind of change we have to make to the space to be actually more useful for employees that want to use that space. I'd be curious also to know like the location strategy of the studios, because you have a lot of offices around the world. You might want to attract talents in many different locations. Do you want them to be close to a studio? What is the strategy there?
Yeah, we've always been anchored to specific kind of hubs. And that's how in, say, San Francisco, Austin, Texas, Seattle, New York, we have our big hub in Dublin, and a few others as well. As the pandemic has gone on, as a company, we are just getting more geographically dispersed, right? We've encouraged hiring in different locations because we wanted to, right? We recognize that it's an opportunity to diversify our talent pool, and we've had great success in closing roles faster, having more applicants, and increasing the diversity of our candidates just through opening up different geographic locations. But right now, the hubs that we have for studios are the existing hubs that we had in the San Francisco, Seattle, New York, Austin. But certainly as we move into 2022, we're looking at, well, where do we have pockets of new drop boxes located, right? So do we have more people now in, say, for example, LA than we used to have? How many people do we have there? And should we create a hub there? So that's going to be an ongoing discussion and maybe one that we can catch up on next year. But we're certainly looking at our data. Say, well, does it make sense to open a new hub somewhere?
Yeah, I mean, and from my experience, when I worked in a remote company, it was really nice to meet up. And right now, those companies that were fully remote for years, they're struggling. It's been 2 years that they didn't have a retreat, a meetup. It makes a huge difference when you get all together and get to feel and have a sense a bit of the people you're working with every day. Because I think my first company, I didn't see people for 1 year before. I didn't meet them for the first year that I was working there. So after 1 year, to see the people, I actually see like how tall they are and the way they move and also the kind of personality they have. It makes a huge difference to have a bit of this in person. And it definitely makes a difference on the culture. I don't believe in the fact that you can do 100% remote without ever seeing each other and feel still good about it. You still want to hang out. We used to meet up in conferences or travel even sometimes to co-work somewhere together and with some of our team just to have a bit of that feel. It definitely made a big difference.
I think that's right. I mean, and that's why we didn't want to be remote only and we didn't want to be hybrid. We recognized, as you said, meeting in person makes a huge difference. I don't think remote only is the way to go. And that's where it has been hard during the pandemic, because a lot of the inability to meet up, like for us, we can't open the studios due to the pandemic, not because we don't have them. It's just due to ongoing health and safety. And so of the last couple of years, there's been a lot of the inability to meet in person and to actually experience just normal life is due to the pandemic, not because it's remote work. And a lot of people confuse that. I think that distinction is really important. It's like people are like, oh, I don't like remote work because I haven't been able to meet anybody. It's like, you haven't been able to meet anybody because of the pandemic and health and safety. And also your social life and your social life and your normal life hasn't been normal either, because you have been restricted in what we can do. And so I think there's that important distinction that what we've experienced, we do reinforce this with employees. What we've been experiencing for almost 2 years is not, for us, virtual first, and for many people, a remote way of working. It's pandemic enforced, you know, isolation in many ways, right? And so that distinction, I think, will be important as we move into 2022, and hopefully it's safe to meet in person again.
Yeah. And actually about this and a bit of your thoughts on the past year and the years to come, what do you think of the overall efforts that company have made this year and the shift of their work mindset and the kind of, how do you want them to evolve in the next year as well?
Well, I think we definitely see this at Dropbox, and I see this personally as just, it's an enormous opportunity to change what we didn't like about the way we used to work. Because I think it's ironic, people like, oh, we get to go back to the office, that's awesome. Let's be honest, that didn't work for many people, right? It wasn't awesome, right? Going into it, driving and commuting for however long you commuted, then sitting in a meeting, walking from meeting to meeting, often with some people dialing in remotely, and then commuting all the way home, like that didn't work for a lot of people. So I'm surprised by people that are just like, oh, I can't wait to get back to how it used to be, because it's, let's be honest, that wasn't working. And I definitely see that this is certainly the last 2 years and the next 2 years, it's a potential for this paradigm shift and this kind of democratization of workplace power in a way that's never been possible before. And I think the shift is actually well overdue. And we can actually make employee life work balance a priority and actually level the playing field. And I think that's what the opportunity is that we have. And if you talk to employees, and there's loads of data out there, so I don't need to cite the data, but employees have got a taste of what it's like not to have to commute. And certainly for me, I've been able, super fortunate, to spend more time with my kids, right? And or personally, if you don't have children, get more time to spend on personal interests. But all at the same time, where I'm still able to really meaningfully contribute to my career. And so for me, there's no going back, right? I just don't see a way of, you know, stepping back. And so, and I think there are companies that are clutching to that tradition, or they're unwilling to take a long, hard look in the mirror and make the changes that employees now want. And they're going to miss out on attracting the best talent in the future. And I think for employees, there's no bigger incentive than giving people the ability to own their own time and the freedom to live their life the way that suits them best. You know, that is wonderful. And then the ability to create like a non-linear workday that works for your personal life, where you can meaningfully contribute to work, and to the company. That incentive is far bigger than salary or ego or titles, and nothing compares to that flexibility and freedom that I think the future of work offers. And that companies that are embracing that are able to offer to employees. So that's how I think, if you asked about the future, I actually think that's what's been the last 2 years, but I also think it's relevant for the next 2 years, because I think the opportunity ahead of us is huge. And I think we've only just really scratched the surface. And I think the next 2 years are going to be even potentially even more interesting than the past two, I think.
Well, on that note, I think I'm going to close the episode today. I'm so happy that you came in and shared all your thoughts. I'm looking forward for 2022 and see what the world has to give us for the next year. Thank you, Alastair, for joining the podcast. You guys can find all links and show notes in the episode descriptions. I will add the Virtual First Toolkit as well. Is there anything else you want to add, Alastair? that you would like to share with everyone?
No, I mean, the toolkit, please use it. I guess the only thing is challenge your own assumptions. It's hard, but it's super worthwhile, right? It's super worthwhile how we used to work and how we think work gets done. You can change that and it is possible. So do that. And there's some great things in the toolkit to help you do that for yourself. And thank you for having me, Daphne. That's the only other thing I'd say. I appreciate you bringing us on.
Thank you for tuning in to Remote First. You can find all links and show notes in the episode description. And if you found value in this show, we'd love your rating on your listening app of choice. Thank you for being here. See you next time.